Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson is a multifaceted guitar shop offering guitar instruction, new and used guitars and amplifiers, and all accessories. We offer guitar repair of the highest quality. Instead of experiencing the total hassle of a big box store, take the scenic drive to Fort Atkinson and experience what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic. We love guitars.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast. Let me start over here. Welcome to another podcast at sliceoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like S&R Remodeling and Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson. Joining us now, John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Anything happened since we last talked, John?
Yeah, there's a couple things. I think a book came out, you know?
Well,
who publishes a book after Christmas?
I know. Here we go. All right, here we
go. That thing's going nowhere.
Here's the coverage.
Tonight, explosive new claims from Steve Bannon, insisting that controversial 2016 Trump Tower meeting between the president's son and a group of Russians was treasonous and unpatriotic, noting Trump Jr., Jared Kushner, and Paul Manafort, all in attendance, should have called the FBI immediately.
Did the president's son, Donald Trump Jr., commit treason?
I think that is a ridiculous accusation.
Bannon, who didn't join the campaign for another 2 months, asserts there's zero chance Trump Jr. didn't introduce his Russian guest to his father. They're going to crack Don Jr. like an egg on national TV, Bannon warns. The White House has said the president first learned about the meeting a year later. Trump today fuming.
I think furious, disgusted would probably certainly fit when you make such outrageous claims and completely false claims against the president, his administration, and his family.
The president unloading in an extraordinary, blistering statement. Steve Bannon has nothing to do with me or my presidency. When he was fired, he not only lost his job, he lost his mind. Adding, Steve doesn't represent my base. He's only in it for himself. But President Trump showered Bannon with praise shortly after his departure.
Steve's been a friend of mine for a long time. I like Steve a lot.
Bannon gives credence to the special counsel's probe. This is all about money laundering, noting Manafort's indictment, arguing Robert Mueller is going after the president by zeroing in on some of those closest to him.
This may be strategic by Bannon to try and demonstrate that he had no part in conduct that he may perceive as risky by other members of the Trump team.
Fire and fury, reportedly based on more than 200 interviews, many conducted inside the West Wing, also reignites questions about Mr. Trump's view of women, reportedly calling aide Hope Hicks a piece of tail in front of her, and using a vulgar expletive to describe Sally Yates, the acting attorney general who he would go on to fire. As for his inauguration day, the soon-to-be president, author Michael Wolff writes, was angry, feeling slighted by the Obamas and celebrities who refused to perform for him, bearing the brunt Melania Trump, who, according to the book, seemed on the verge of tears. The First Lady's office dismissing it all as fiction. Wolf claims first daughter Ivanka and husband Jared Kushner have entertained their own political future, agreeing she'd be the one to run for president. The author also airing dirty laundry about the president's unusual habits and demands at the White House, reprimanding the housekeeping staff for picking up his shirt, saying, if my shirt's on the floor, it's because I want it on the floor.
Peter, what?
you think Shakespeare's turning over in his grave?
Yeah, because this is so much better. And just on a couple of levels. First off, that was a good report, but it totally blew the clothes. Because the shirt thing is secondary to the fact that he thinks somebody's going to poison him with his toothbrush. The president doesn't allow anybody to touch his toothbrush. No. And the other thing that's classically Shakespearean is, if you read the book, which is actually a rip-roaring fast read, I got to tell you. If you read the book, it goes full Shakespeare in the Ivanka-Melania relationship. And Ivanka used to tease Melania and sort of like, or at least make fun of her by saying, everything you need to know about Melania is that she thinks Donald Trump can be elected president.
Whoa.
So can you imagine when Trump reads that Ivanka laughed about his prospects, but Melania might actually like Donald Trump enough to believe, you know, or at least to have some faith in the guy.
Well,
it's just, that's the stuff that Shakespeare built.
And yet, there's a portion of this book that they have, you talk about laughable, the fact that Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump would somehow think that they could be president.
And well, the fact that Jared Kushner could imagine that a convicted felon could be involved. Sorry, we're jumping ahead here. But no, there's so much about this book. It is an absolutely rich treasure trove. And what we know is that Michael Wolff is, he's a gossip monger, you know, to some extent. A good reporter, as any gossip monger must be, but a guy who's primarily interested in the intrigues of celebrities, of the wealthy. And, you know, there's a lot of people criticizing him now and saying he's, you know, didn't like this aspect or didn't believe this aspect or whatever. But this is the thing to understand about Michael Wolff. He has survived for decades in New York City in an incredibly litigious and difficult media market and still pretty much on the top of the game. And so anybody who tries to shunt him aside or dismiss him or suggest that, you know, this is some fake book, I would counsel be careful.
Here's
Michael Wolff usually survives.
Here's Michael Wolff with two F's.
Would you release any of those recordings since your credibility is being questioned?
My credibility is being questioned by a man who has less credibility than perhaps anyone who has ever walked on earth at this point.
At this point.
That's perfect. And the other thing was, you know, when Trump tried to do something that is unprecedented in the history of the presidency, tried to get a cease and desist order against a book that, you know, the president, a sitting president, found to be distasteful or perhaps threatening to him. Literally trying to ban a book. And Michael Wolff's line on it was fantastic, perfect, which was, where do I send the box of chocolates?
Here's another clip.
Because, of course, nothing makes the book bigger than Trump's horror at it.
Yeah, you know, you'd think he'd learn from Richard Nixon, but I guess not. Here's another clip of Michael Wolff with two Fs.
Everyone around the president, senior advisors, family members, every single one of them questions his intelligence and fitness for office.
Let me put a marker in the sand here. 100% of the people around him. I will tell you the one description that everyone gave, everyone has in common. They all say he is like a child. And what they mean by that is he has a need for immediate gratification. It's all about him. I mean, this letter for the cease and desist letter. I mean, I still have sources in the White House, and I know everybody was going, we should not be doing this. This is not smart. And he just insists. He just has to be satisfied in the moment.
The lack of loyalty to this president has got to be spurred on by the way he treats people, right?
Sure. I mean, there's no question. And this is the thing about Wolff's book that's quite fascinating. Again, you know, people can like the guy, dislike him, feel whatever they want about him. The fact is that he used a unique circumstance, his prominence in the New York media circles, and frankly, his prominence as somebody who writes about the wealthy and powerful, to insinuate himself into the White House in a way where he was literally sitting on the couch as these conversations were taking place. And that's why he can speak with such authority. He's very, very confident in what he's saying because he was literally there. And some of the conversations that he recounts, and again, people will say what they want about him, but if they are even minimally reflective of what was said and thought, are absolutely devastating. There's a scene where they are literally upstairs from the Oval Office, or, you know, they're in the communications area of the West Wing. And Kellyanne Conway is talking, I think it's to Hope Hicks, and they're discussing how they handle the White House Correspondents' Dinner because, as they both acknowledge, Trump just isn't funny. and doesn't have a sense of humor, doesn't get jokes. And it's actually is one of the more devastating portrayals of someone, of a president that I've ever read.
Yeah, they must have remembered how he performed at the Al Smith dinner.
Oh, horribly. And what I'm saying is they're talking about us, but then they're also, it's so pathetic, so agonizingly awful, because what is recounted in that discussion where their Wolf is talking about being there, he says very gently, a journalist, quote unquote, tells them in the midst of this conversation that the editor of Vanity Fair, Graydon Carter, who's somebody who Trump has always hated and who's had a real rivalry with Trump for a long, long time, very New York thing, is going to be stepping down. And the conversation immediately turns to which of the aides gets to tell Trump because it will make him so happy. I mean, it's like telling it's like telling a child something that, you know, you think will make them happy, you know, because they find out something bad is happening to somebody they don't like. It's a very devastating portrayal, although I will emphasize the funnest stuff in the book for we Wisconsinites is the big section on Paul Ryan.
Now, is this about policy? Are we talking about NAFTA negotiations here, John?
Hardly. It's a big section on how, right after the election, Bannon had a plot to take Ryan out as Speaker, to remove him. And it's a devastating portrayal of Ryan in that what you see is that Ryan was really, really weakened. Trump didn't dislike Ryan on any policy issue whatsoever. There was no policy complaint about Ryan. He didn't care. He wasn't interested. He never paid attention to the guy. He disliked Ryan because Ryan had not been fully loyal during the campaign. And it was this well-described, a deep disdain for Ryan for not showing due deference. And it was a problem. Bannon had recruited Congressman Meadows from North Carolina, a potential rival for Ryan, somebody who's a very high-level player in the Freedom Caucus, and it looked bad for Ryan, or at least potentially bad. And Ryan knew this. And so what is described, it's literally like they said it was movie or film level flattery and obsequiousness that Ryan would come to the White House and just tell Trump how great he was and literally suck up to him. It's described as sucking up in the book in every way.
He went full Eddie Haskell.
He did. And it is hilarious because it worked. Ryan succeeded in, you know, seeing off what might have been a really serious challenge. And at a point when Trump was, at least within the party, at a very powerful place, by literally basically becoming Trump's lapdog. And Trump liked it so much, because remember, this is a guy who lives off flattery, liked what Ryan was doing so much that he, after meeting with Ryan and actually having the first probably serious sit down with him, says he's a pretty smart guy of Ryan. And I thought to myself, well, you know who Trump thinks is smart, right? Somebody tells him he's right.
Right.
And so the interesting thing was I recall most of all that great line about Newt Gingrich, that Newt Gingrich is what dumb people think a smart person sounds
mm-hmm.
like.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ryan made himself that with Donald Trump.
You know, I think how Donald Trump has changed our national discourse. Here is, we know what Donald Trump, the vulgar word that Donald Trump used about the former assistant attorney general. Here's Katie Turra on NBC this weekend talking about it.
Michael Wolff's new book, Fire and Fury, has some shocking anecdotes about Donald Trump and women. One involves the former acting attorney general, Sally Yates, who was fired just 10 days after President Trump took office after refusing to enforce the Trump administration's original travel ban. We later learned that Sally Yates also had warned the White House that then National Security Advisor Michael Flynn had lied about his contacts with Russians and could be vulnerable to blackmail. Fire and Fury details Trump's preoccupation with Sally Yates even after he fired her and quotes Donald Trump saying Sally Yates is, quote, Such a see you next Tuesday.
It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable. And the incredible thing was that Sally Yates actually tried to warn the Trump administration about what has turned out to be the biggest thorn in the side of the Trump administration, aside from Trump's daily problems, which is the Russia thing, or at least elements of the Russia thing. And instead of listening to her, respecting her, reacting in the way that anybody who swore an oath of office to defend the country would, they turned her into a subject of immense and scorching hatred. And the weird thing about it is, I've been struck by this in the aftermath of the publication of the book, where Trump's defenders have rushed to, you know, look at, you know, things that Trump has done, like trying to ban a book, which in and of itself is a pretty serious matter for somebody who's sworn oath to, you know, defend the Constitution. Their immediate reaction is, well, Hillary did worse things. And Trump himself is pushing, they're all pushing this Hillary line. And what you realize is that Trump's biggest change, in my view, in the Republican Party, is that the Republican Party, at least those who are aligned with Trump, have adopted his approach to politics, which is to be obsessed with people you don't like, especially, it seems, women you don't like, and to let that obsession go to a point of complete illogic. It's a very fascinating thing.
Yeah, Roland Martin on ABC this morning talked about that simply the Republicanism today is these different factions, they get what they need out of Donald Trump and go along and play the game because they seek power and they see in him the ends justifying the means.
I think it's true. And also, again, while many of them would deny it directly, they see him as strategically sound or strategically wise, i.e. that, you know, somehow it makes sense to say, oh, well, it's okay that Trump is doing authoritarian, dangerous things that they, you know, like the Authors Guild describes as unprecedented.
Yeah, when I watch this, I channel my inner Green Acres.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like Oliver Douglas, where like everything was insane on that show in Hooterville, right? But it
and
was perfectly normal to everyone,
one.
Right? Right?
Yeah, he was the weird one,
right?
Because he didn't
yes.
get it.
I watched this, and I'm like,
when Mr. Haney said that he was the plant manager because he had six flowers in front of him.
Exactly. Stand by, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation at SlysOffice.com.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date, whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
Welcome back to SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local unions like Madison Firefighters, Local 311, Madison Teamsters, Local 695, and, of course, our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. So in amongst all the craziness going on, I mentioned Green Acres. One of the great villains in all this is Roger Stone, who made an appearance on the Laura Ingraham show. By the way, Laura Ingraham is just on a roll right now. I mean,
She is signed on for this project. And you know the weird thing about Laura Ingraham? Well, that's an interesting way to start any sentence. But the weird thing about Laura Ingraham is she's really smart. She's like Steve
smart
Bannon
enough
smart.
To know smart enough to know better.
Totally. And again, she's Steve Bannon smart. Smart in the sense that, you know, she knows politics, she knows the play, she knows what's going on. And yet she has signed on for this thing. I think, and same with Bannon, who, by the way, I believe will survive all this and come out strong. But she's signed on for personal reasons. It is profitable. It is empowering. And it is potentially, depending on where things go, defining, i.e. that she's part of something very big. And so it's fascinating to watch, because I don't necessarily think it's illogical for her to sign on. But I do think it's a very good indication that smart, competent people are a part of this project.
And then on the other hand, there's Sean Hannity. Here is...
Which is a different story altogether.
Right. Here is Roger Stone on with Laura Ingraham.
Republican congressman.
Well, the first thing to understand here is that all of this means that the Russian collusion delusion has failed. The Democrats and their handmaidens in the media, having been able to produce no evidence whatsoever of real Russian collusion to assist in the election of Donald Trump, have now switched to Plan B. Plan B is, oh, Donald Trump's crazy. He's mentally unstable. He's nuts. No, not at all. He has his extra sensitivities. So did Harry Truman. So did Theodore Roosevelt. So did Andrew Jackson. In the case of a guy like Joe Scarborough, this is just bitter jealousy. The entire time Joe Scarborough was in the House of Representatives, he told his aides and his successor in Congress that he would someday be president. When Donald Trump was nominated for president, Joe Scarborough thought he should be the nominee.
Really? Really? I don't remember that
one. In fairness, Joe Scarborough probably does think he should be the nominee on a regular basis, no matter who's...
All right. Well, since I love that this is somehow Plan B.
Yeah. Well, what I love about it is Stone is so good at this, right? He uses the term handmaiden, which is always a winner. But he's
not as good as you using consigliere.
Consigliere is a good one. Yeah. But what's fascinating,
I believe you used that
this,
to describe our state Senate majority leader.
Oh, he is. I mean, he looks it too, doesn't he? But no, the interesting thing about this is that Stone is good at this. And if he was the only person running this angle, i.e. this claim that this is sort of a Plan B thing, because he might pull it off. But he's not, and the other people can't do it as well. And here's the deal. This notion is the notion of a Plan B, i.e. that Trump is crazy. It's a genius scam. First element of it is it suggests that the Russia thing is done. It's over. There's nothing there. There's zero evidence that that's true. In fact, the evidence is quite to the opposite. The Russian thing literally keeps unfolding on a daily basis, and now you have the president's chief strategist in the transition period and in the first stages of his presidency, saying that the president's son engaged in treasonous activities with the Russians. It's hardly over. But then
and forget the word collusion. This is conspiracy.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But then the second part of the claim of a collusion delusion, i.e. that, you know, it was some sort of, it was never real, is the suggestion that, you know, somehow there's just a bunch of folks flailing around looking for something to throw at Donald Trump. Well, understand, there's barely a Democrat or a liberal or any thinking person, I shouldn't say thinking, than any person who might be identified as on the left, in Fire and Fury. It's a book full of Republicans and conservatives and Trump's business allies talking. So this whole suggestion that Trump is crazy, is that coming from, it's not like, you know, Nancy Pelosi and you know, Chuck Schumer sat down and said, okay, our talking point for next week is Trump is crazy. Now, a book came out by a guy who, frankly, again, love him or hate him, who had the wherewithal to basically do a two-year, almost three-year project of insinuating himself into Trump's inner circle, interviewing the president, interviewing people around the president, getting as close as he possibly could and reporting as much as he could out of it, came out with a book that people read as saying that Trump is crazy.
Here is the president yesterday at Camp David.
Everybody tells me I'm not under investigation. Maybe Hillary is, I don't know, but I'm not. But there's been no collusion. There's been no crime, but we have been very open. We could have done it two ways. We could have been very closed and it would have taken years. But, you know, it's sort of like when you've done nothing wrong, let's be open and get it over with. Because, honestly, it's very, very bad for our country. It's making our country look foolish.
Everything he says is the opposite of the truth.
I know. Don't you love the concept of being very open and cooperating, stuff like that. How do you do that? Oh, I don't know. Maybe you could start by firing the head of the FBI. I mean, how do
you? As I said, everything he just said there is the opposite of the truth.
It is. Hey, totally true. But can I take us back to Paul Ryan for a sec? Because that's another element of this thing. There's a fascinating thing in the book where it turns out that Paul Ryan was the guy who convinced Trump to make Tom Price the Secretary of Health and Human Services. And, of course, Price blew up, the first cabinet member to force to resign and all this other stuff. And what you realize about this thing is where, you know, this concept of Trump saying things that are the opposite of the truth. One of the things that comes out from some key sections of the book is that Trump is literally so uninterested and so disengaged that when he is forced to take action or make a pronouncement on something, he literally does. He's very susceptible to the advice of whoever's in the room with him, to whoever's counseling him at a certain moment. And I think there's often many cases where he actually believes these things that are 100% untrue. Now, in the Russia thing, of course, it's different. But on a lot of what he does, there's tremendous evidence that, you know, if it's on Fox, it's real.
We now have a lawless Republican Party, a Congress that is not fulfilling its duty to be a check and balance on the executive branch of government. As a matter of fact, they're doing the exact opposite. Here is one of the more loathsome congressmen and member of the Freedom Caucus, Jim Jordan of Ohio.
And, of course, of the House Oversight and Judiciary Committees. Congressman, let's talk about whether this is a real critical turn for the Attorney General. You came out with an op-ed that you wrote a few days ago. We'll get into that. But this is now a new development. It's not Fusion GPS. This goes right to the heart of the Clinton corruption. At the State Department and at the email server, which of those investigations is more important in your view?
They're all important, and they should have happened a long time ago. I think this is a turning point, and I think a lot of credit goes to Chairman Nunes and the push that he's been having, and frankly, a bunch of us. I mean, we've talked about Attorney General Sessions doing his job over there. I think we're maybe turning a corner here, as you point out, getting to the bottom of these important questions that the American people want answers to.
Yeah, the American people are just dying to reopen the Hillary Clinton investigation, aren't they?
This thing hasn't even permeated into the Republican base. I mean, it's like, they're like, oh, I thought we beat her. But you see, this is an interesting strategic thing, and I think it is important to keep track of. One of the criticisms that I had of Barack Obama when he came to power as President of the United States was that he immediately said, yeah, bygones are bygones. We got to move forward. Past is past. Bush is an okay guy. I don't care about Cheney. We're not going to hold anybody to account for two undeclared and incredibly disastrous wars.
Waterboarding.
We're not going.
Torture.
What's that?
Waterboarding, yeah. Torture.
And off the books, economically or financially off the books, i.e. that were costing us an incredible fortune. Obama got criticized for putting them on the books.
Isn't that an amazing thing? That's one of the untold stories, is that the wars were off the books, and so was some of the cost of Medicare Part D.
Obama did the responsible thing,
and then they went, look, you just raised our national debt.
You put us in debt.
Yeah.
Because you revealed how Bush and Cheney put us in debt, but didn't blame them for it. And also the same thing on the collapse of the global economy. Instead of saying, look, the Bush administration, Cheney, these guys made unimaginably bad decisions. It's been well documented in books about the administration and details from it. And some people have to be held to account. You know, thousands of people were held to account for the Great Depression, politically and legally. Make that point. Obama didn't do that, and he created a vulnerability that allowed lies, just flat-out lies, to develop about him. While I disagree with what the Trump people are doing, think it's very dishonest, don't think that their focus on Hillary Clinton is realistic or even, you know, in the ballpark of appropriate on the issues that they're playing, the fact is this is clearly a political strategy, and it is one that that has some soundness. If you're in a lot of trouble yourself, what you do is you constantly blame your perceived or, you know, self-identified, in your game, opponent in order to not to make people believe that Hillary Clinton's the devil incarnate. Only, you know, the base Republicans might, but others won't. But to make possible swing voters, ordinary folks, think everything is corrupt. Everybody's a bad player. And in that game, if everybody's corrupt and everybody's a bad player, then the relative success of the economy, things like that, might save or protect the Republicans.
Finally, I just have to send you out with a smile today. Here we go. This is from a montage of comedians.
According to a new book called Fire and Fury, Donald Trump didn't want to be president. He didn't want him to win. There's a name for that. The majority of American voters.
He sprays his hair with Just for Men and Ivanka makes fun of him for it. He's constantly leaking information about himself and then demanding to know who leaked the information. He didn't want to win the presidency and was horrified when he did. Melania cried. We all cried, really, but Melania.
Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin and former Chief of Staff Reince Priebus believed Trump to be an idiot. Gary Cohn then regards Trump as dumb as curse word. And the president's top national security advisor, H.R. McMaster, considers him a dope.
Wow. Trump's own people think that he's dumb as a watermelon. I guess the country isn't as divided as it seems.
Some believed that for all practical purposes, he was no more than semi-literate.
Huh. Semi-literate? Sorry, haters, but that's still literate.
Apparently, every night, if Trump was not having his 6:30 dinner with Steve Bannon, he was in bed by that time with a cheeseburger. I'm gonna hope eating it.
Have you ever, ever heard an American president ridiculed the way that this president is ridiculed?
No, it's never, ever happened. And the interesting thing about it is that this is really one of the things that people should be most concerned about with Donald Trump. Because, look, I don't think that we should revere presidents. I think we should hold them to account and be very skeptical of all of them and be, you know, willing to impeach those who should be impeached right up to that level. However, the one thing is that you would like there to be, you know, some respect for the office. But the only way that there's respect for the office is if the person who is in it respects it. And if there's one thing that comes from Fire and Fury, you read the thing cover to cover, you accept as much of it as you want, reject as much of it as you want. But the one thing that comes out of that book is that Donald Trump has no respect for the office. He doesn't understand his role. He doesn't understand the bully pulpit. He doesn't understand his duties, his responsibilities. And it's summed up by the fact that literally he tried to get a cease and desist order, a ban on a book criticizing him. Now, he swears an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States. That includes the First Amendment. It includes all sorts of structural protections that assure that the president doesn't become a king. His response, using his private lawyers, was to act as a king. And we should understand this. If his immediate response is to ban a book that criticizes him, this guy doesn't begin to understand the duty of the president to show us how this country should operate.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
Thanks, brother.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, five more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.